And you were born in Rwanda while there was a civil war going on. Did you ever feel as you were growing up that war and violent conflict were simply the way of the world?
You know, I was born during a civil war, but I don't know much about what happened exactly, except what I learned from my mother, and of course through books and other people. But when I was in elementary school, life was normal until in 1973, when another cycle of violence, another episode of violence took place. That is when I really experienced the war, because at some point my parents' house was burned down. We fled into a home of our friends, and while in that house, people threatened to kill us. Eventually, we survived, but I got a sense that the area where I was born was not safe. But after that episode, it was normal again until 1990, and that is when a war broke out, and it went on until 1994, when the genocide took place, and in which my parents were killed, and many of my siblings were also killed.
When that happened, were your immediate thoughts ones of revenge, or what happened to make you think you needed to ignore the past and focus on the future?
You know, because there are no other options, there are no other reasonable way for individuals and for the country to recover and have a normal life after a genocide or after a war. The only viable route is to embrace peace and reconciliation, not revenge. Because, as you know, revenge perpetuates the cycle of violence and leads to more upheaval at personal level, but also at community and national level. Whereas peace and reconciliation lead to healing and to economic development. So that was my reasoning. But specifically, I tried to find my own way, to find my own motivation, not to go to the root toward revenge, but also but to the root toward reconciliation. And so I tried to conceptualize three things. And one was the idea that future generations should live in peace. So my thought was that I suffered from this conflict. My mother suffered from this conflict. Even my grandmother suffered from that conflict. So the conflict went from a generation to the next. And I felt it had to stop if my children, my grandchildren, future generation would have a chance to live in peace. So whatever sacrifice I could make, I said I should make it to make sure future generations live in peace. So that was one of my reasoning. The other reasoning was my spirituality. I grew up in a Christian family, and we were always taught not to take revenge. We were always taught to be kind. Be kind to our friends. Be kind to any person, and be kind also to even our enemies. So I thought that since our religion, like any religion, teaches forgiveness, not revenge, I should do that. Since religion taught us to embrace reconciliation, I thought I should do that. So that was the reasoning. Another reasoning, of course, was my health. After the crisis, I had difficulties finding sleep. Had headaches. Stomachache. So I was really devastated physically. And I realized that keeping anger, keeping hatred, it was destructive to me, not to the people I was angry at. So put together, I decided to embrace peace and reconciliation, and I started working toward that.
Do you think most of the wars and other conflicts in the world are the result of people seeking revenge for something that's happened?
Exactly. That's the main reason. People tend to react to violence with violence. They tend to react to insult with insult, hatred with hatred. And that basically what it does, it perpetuates that cycle of hatred, that cycle of violence. But if people had the courage to resist, but not by another evil, but something good, I think this world will be more peaceful than it is today.
Do you feel you were able to persuade others in Rwanda to envision the future while you served in Parliament?
You know, while I served, I think I did. And there were also many other people who realized that revenge was not a solution. It was not a solution to bring together Hutu and Tutsi. It was not a solution to heal our trauma. It was not a solution. It was not wrong. It was wrong. So I was able to help people find the best way to overcome the upheaval we went through. And so I did while in Rwanda, and I continue to do it while in the United States.
Yeah, you're teaching conflict resolution today at the School for International Training. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And the School for International Training, which actually has a new name, SIT Graduate Institute, is a part of World Learning, which is a non-profit organization based in D.C. And the SIT Graduate Institute has many programs, and one of the programs is about conflict transformation or conflict resolution. And it brings together people from all over the world, mainly the people who are from war-torn countries, to help them gain knowledge and practical skills on how to manage a conflict, on how to prevent conflict and promote peace in their communities, but also promote peace in the world.
Do you feel you're making headway? Or are you making an impact?
Absolutely, absolutely. When I look at the people who go through our training and who go back to their communities and train more people and launch a new non-profit organization, so it's really amazing, and I wish we had the capacity to train more people. I wish we had more capacity to go visit and give them more skills and expand our program. But we have been able to do that to some extent thanks to the generosity of individuals and organizations that support World Learning.
What world leaders would you like to invite to the school for some training?
You know, I wish we could bring head of states, we could bring people who hold position in government, but also, so we have not been able to bring some of those. Just a few people have come from those top leaders, but I wish we could. But we have been able to bring leaders of non-profit organizations, leaders of churches, and it has been really amazing. And we have also been able actually to also conduct programs in field in the South or Eastern Asia, in Africa, in the former Yugoslavia. And when we do, we have a chance we have the opportunity to bring more people into the program because for a number of people, it's not easy to obtain a visa to the U.S. So by going to those countries and conduct training and other activities there, we can reach more people and also avoid that, the hassle of obtaining a visa to the U.S.
If you could bring more world leaders to the school, what would you tell them?
You know, I would tell them that that investing in peace is the best investment, that they should include in the school curriculum skills like conflict management, the ideas that brings in the values of kindness, values of forgiveness, values of generosity, and educate particularly young people from the earlier age so that people can grow up with the idea, with the belief that even though we are different in terms of the race, in terms of ethnicity or religion, we are all human beings and we all need to do good to each other. And if we do, then we will use our resources to develop the country in terms of infrastructure, education, healthcare, instead of using limited resources to maintain peace through more police, through more the military. So it's effective, it's efficient when we invest in peace rather than investing in wars.
Do you hold out hope that can happen someday?
I have hope that it can happen someday. What it requires is for world leaders to change how they view the world. Understand that if we invest in peace, that peace can have ramification into development. We can develop quickly and in a lasting way if we invest in education in terms of peace education, and then allow many people access education and they understand that we gain by promoting reconciliation, promoting peaceful resolution of conflict rather than fighting and overcoming evil with another evil.
What if we see shortages in something such as oil or perhaps water? I mean, how do you go about making sure everyone gets along instead of getting into a conflict over scarce resources?
Yes, there will always be shortage of oil or water or resources in general. But the best way to share limited resources is not through competition, violent competition. It's through mechanisms that promote the well-being of all human beings. If we put in place a system that promotes values of compassion, empathy, kindness in general, then we will also understand that we can all have access to oil and water and other limited resources and enjoy them better than fighting over them.
How did you end up in the U.S.?
Well, like many other people who eventually find that they're not safe in their country, they are not safe in many parts of the world, and they ask to come to the U.S. So I went through that process too.
Okay. Anything you want to add?
You know, the only thing I should say is that whatever suffering we go through, and that suffering can be something dramatic like genocide, but it can also be disappointment that takes place between friends, It can be any other wrongdoing that people do to each other in our daily lives. So whatever happens, our reaction should be to maintain our kindness. Nothing should take away our kindness. By showing kindness to others, we help the people who did wrong to us to change. But when we react with another wrong, it's like validating what they did to us. We basically transform them into new victims. So we increase the number of victims when we overcome the bad with another bad. We increase the amount of evil when we add an evil to another evil. So whatever happens, we should resist the temptation to do another evil. We should instead show kindness, and show that kindness not only to our friends, but also to the people who hate us.
Hey, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.